Good afternoon and welcome to the Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, except today is going to be minus Dwight because he's under the cloud. Well, he's under the weather. He's not dead. He's fine. He's just there. He's just fine. It's just that his voice, if he showed up, you know, y'all will start, telling me to shut up so you can listen to him. His flu just made him sound more Dwighter than the usual Dwight now. I will be flying solo for the, for today and tomorrow. So, it's a Monday, so, well, it's a, which is, actually somewhat sad because, well, it's a, Monday is a, well, it's Dwight's day. Mine, I like Fridays. He likes Mondays. I'm still trying to ask myself one. I mean, of all days of the week, who loves Mondays? But anyway, pardon moi. Today we are going to have conversations, or more like a discussion around the subject of, or more like our topic of today is around the subject of energy, and that is energy being specifically the oil and especially the oil and gas, and the oil and gas an industry which is still in its infancy here in Namibia. We're all looking forward to to production time where our country is going to make billions and billions of dollars and everyone is going to be rich and then we'll live happily ever after. Stepping out of that fantasy land, let's look at some of the, let's look at some of the realities that, of how the industry work. First of all, the oil and gas industry, just like every industry, is always mired in controversy in terms of a lot of energy giants have been accused across the world of of oil spillage, being not doing their due diligence in terms of environmental, in terms of following the countries or territorial waters or international waters in terms of oil spillage. But to make sure that we don't find ourselves in, as a country, to make sure that we don't find ourselves in, with the, being mired in a controversy of being one that does not care about the environment or does not do, does not have the proper structures in place or the proper planning in place to execute the energy infrastructure, to execute the energy business. A lot of things must be in place. A lot of things must be in place. And, just to take you back a few, not a few years ago, just to take you back to last year. Let me, let's start by taking a step to last year. We're going to take a few steps, along the show. We're going to take a few steps again back to 2022. But let's start with 2024. And, you're gonna understand why. And there's actually no strict particular order why I want to follow the chronology in that way. It's just that I want to start with, Namibia and then we go out and then we come back again. This conversation, or more like, today's topic is proudly inspired or proudly it's proudly inspired by the Namibia International Energy Conference that took place, last week. And, this is an annual thing. This is an annual thing where we basically look at Namibia's oil and gas industry. Like, where did we come from? Usually we don't go far back. We just go, 2022 with Shell's discoveries. And then we move from there to, according to the standard chronological measurements in terms of what must be in place before you start, commercializing, like the product that itself, that being oil, what is the approximate time frame are we looking at? What is the approximate time frame that you know are we looking at? This is at least the question that a lot of us were asking ourselves for a while, until until Deloitte Namibia published one of to this day, which is one of my favorite reports reports on the subject of oil and gas. That is that's the industrial baseline survey, where it's where my favorite part being the eighth page, they just outline more like a summary of how this oil and oil and gas industry works. Now I know that from the discoveries we all it was basically normal to be excited that we have oil and gas, especially when you look at the economic advantages that that countries that have had these resources for a very long time. When you look at the economic advantages that they have, it's okay to be excited. It really is. It's okay to be excited and start having all these kind of fancy pictures of what the economy is going to look like. Take for example in 10 or 20 years. Except one thing that one thing that Mr. Shobon points out in the introduction to the Namibian economy is that whenever we have, just like any type of discussion, whenever we're having the oil and gas discussion, it's always important to note that, when the oil and gas discussion, not just oil and gas, basically the, he writes that in terms of the extractive industry. Although, in terms of the overall, the extractive industry overall. Although the statement he makes it out of the oil and gas example. What Mr. Shobon points out that, when the oil and gas, or more like extractive industry discussion is coming out, is coming out of the political sphere, it's always important to note that, politicians have a high-end goal, which is mostly, to give, over-exaggerate good news so they can win votes. And when the oil and gas discussion, or basically industrial discussion, extractive industry discussion, is coming out of the economic sphere, aka economists, or more like investors, investor representatives, or shareholder, different shareholder representatives, having that discussion, you also have to put in mind that they could also be exaggerating that good news. It's good news, but they also have their reason to exaggerate it, which is usually when they exaggerate things, that also inflates their reputation as an entity mostly. Well, a reputation as an entity or a company. And that, has the positive effect to their, to their shares or stock price on the stock market. Because African English here. Oh, it's just me, but okay. The gooder the reputation of a country, of a company is, the better the more the prices of their stock or their shares is going to increase. Therefore, they're going to make a lot of money out of that. Basically, what Mr. Shobon points out is that, whether the discussion of the extractive industry, not just oil and gas per se, is coming out of the political sphere or it's coming out of the economic sphere, it's always important to take it with a pinch of salt, because any one of these two sides can over exaggerate what the finding or the information that's being shared for their own individual or institutional benefits. Now I understand why the truth made Gandhi very hated, and you are well, got our Lord and Savior crucified. Now that we have gone through the disclaimer, proudly handed to us by by Mr. Shobon in his book, The Introduction to the Namibian Economy, let's get back to the Deloitte Namibia's industrial baseline survey. In terms of projection, take from the seismic surveys, you know, from basically exploration to decommissioning. There's a very nice timeline that they have in that report, and that is a seismic survey, drilling, and data analysis is what is altogether referred to exploration and appraisal, which is which takes place approximately between 2 to 3 years. So it's not a one size fits all. It doesn't have the specific time frame. Obviously, a lot of things matter, including terrain and whether the expertise, machineries, and everything. Can you gather them in a specific time frame? Can you gather them in fast enough for them to carry out the seismic survey, for example, fast enough? And one thing that now, when you're looking at a seismic survey, drilling, and data analysis, each one of these points. If we learned one thing from Mr. Shobon's introduction to Namibian economy, they all have their own price. Now, according to Mr. Shobon in that book, he points out that the seismic survey itself is most likely to come with a price tag of about 300 million Namibian dollars. That's just a survey. Not the drilling, not the data, just, well, seismic survey. And at this point, I'm beginning to ask myself that, okay, I know I'm Namibian. I know maybe I can just apply and get myself an exploration license, but looking at the price tag, it's, makes you question every decision I've ever made. And another question is, even if I had the 300 million, it's always important to know that a survey is more like you asking a question. You don't know what the answer is, because the answer you're looking for is there oil here? Now, whether or not the answer is yes or no, that $300 million is gone, because you have to pay the people that have the expertise and the equipments to carry out the survey. But anyway, exploration and appraisal is projected to take place somewhere between 2 to 5 years. And once the exploration and appraisals are done, that sort of like sets you, if the finding is positive, aka if you carry out the survey and drilling and analysis, and you find out that you have green flags for both, which is you have the oil. And, it's of the right quality, and it's of the right depth that you can exploit it over a long term for a reasonable economic investment. Then then that sort of like gets you out of the woods in terms of, crossed finger spending. Because when you're spending the $300 million for a seismic survey, you don't know yet whether or not there is oil. But after the appraisal, after the exploration and appraisal, then you cross over from the red region of this whole investment to the green part, which is, then you now get to the point where it's very easy to reasonably sit investors down and ask them to invest. Because, then you cross the, it's literally drawn with a red line. Then you cross the, the final investment decision line. Which is, you have individuals that are willing to throw that money in, and cross their fingers and hope. And you have those that are willing to drag their feet and go like, well, I don't have good experience for this. I'll just wait for you guys, to confirm that there is oil here and it's of the right quality and it's the right quantity, reasonable enough to invest in. And then that brings you to the, after it's confirmed, then that brings you to the construction phase. The construction phase, especially, this is a construction and installation construction or installation. You have to understand that if it's the type of oil that we're talking about, especially in Namibia, it's mostly offshore. It's a fancy way of saying it's in the middle of the ocean somewhere. So it's not like you can just set up a brick house and then start drilling. No. not like it's not drilled with a brick house. You don't do that. You can't just set up a pump. You need a a floating platform, like, like an oil rig, for example. The floating, what is known as FPSO, or floating production storage and offloading. This is where you have construction installation yards and subsea systems, and you have assembly yard, naval, topside. That's a lot of petroleum industry terms. And you have mechanical manufacturing and installation. All these things, to put it together, it takes about 6 to 8 years, give or take. Only after you go through that 6 to 8 years, minus the 2 to 5 years that minus the 2 to 5 years of appraisal and of exploration of and appraisal. After that one, that only then do you spill over into the production phase. Now, that production phase is what all of us are looking forward to. Like, okay, well, when are we going to start drilling? That's the time period that we are waiting for. So, in short, seeing that the first oil discovery, or at least the one that most of us can remember, came to the attention of a lot of us, was made back in 2022, right? So all you just have to do is take 2 to 5 years and add it with 5 to 8 years, and then you will have the approximate time frame that and then add that to 2022, then it will be at least easy for you to do your own math as to what is the approximate time frame. But by the way, you're not the only one using the word approximate. It's being used pretty much throughout the industry. So believe me, right now, this is especially for political enthusiasts. Since we can all agree that we are looking forward to the oil and gas production phase, especially those of you that are political enthusiasts, we cannot afford political instability. Now, the reason why I'm pointing, and that's just my point of view, by the way. You don't have to agree. You can agree or disagree with. Now, and this is both for the leaders and the ordinary citizens like you and me. That's if you're not a VVIP listening. We cannot afford political instability. Now, just to run you through the whole thing so that I can emphasize the point of why I'm making that, more like reinforce my point, or add a little bit of salt to my point. The production phase that we are looking for, that we are all looking forward to, runs in a period between 20 to 25 years. That's a whole generation. And then then after that, you are looking at a decommissioning time period of 2 to 3 years. So looking at the type of investment in terms of time and money, and in terms of time and money that we are putting into the into our oil and gas sector, believe me, we cannot afford any political instability. So that means if you're in public office, you may want to listen to the people so that they don't cause some unnecessary political instability. And if you are an ordinary citizen, you may want to stick to the, have a civilized conversation with your leaders, not the political instability one. Because if you end up with one, what happens is investors usually just, cut their losses and, go leave the country crying because of all the billions of money of dollars that they have invested, and then take their money anywhere else. Now, after that, even if you take, for example, in a year or two, there is some degree of political stability, it's going to be extremely hard to convince someone that lost 300 million because of some political instability, after 2 years down the line, to come back and invest again, because they'll be like, how can you assure me that I'm not going to invest my 300 million again, and then there's another political instability, and I have, you know, of which I will have to walk away with my empty hands in my pocket, with my empty hands in my empty pockets. Yeah. I know. So, whenever there is a take, for example, God forbid there is political instability between, you know, if you have, okay, how do I put this? If you have any, you know, any political instability, you know, if you have any political instability for some twisted reason, you have some political instability plans in mind, put them on hold for at least another, I don't know, give it 50 years, please. Thank you. Give it 50 years. According to my not very good math, I know there's a reason why I pointed that out, you know, just not very good at math. According to my not very good math, the time period that we are looking at, the time period that we are waiting for, the time period that we are waiting for is, and that is of, and that is of, that is of Namibia's oil and gas hitting its, its production phase. It's somewhere between 7 to 13 years. That's the approach, you know, somewhere in between there. Somewhere between 7 to 13 years. That's almost a half. So that means if you, you know, we take, for example, 2022, then you know, 2022, and first of all, you add 7 to that and you have, okay, somewhere 2029, basically from 2029. I wouldn't even put my drinks because, I wouldn't bet my drink, especially this time of the month, on 2029. I'm saying it's just me. I would not bet my drink on 2029. I would bet it on somewhere in the middle. So, what number do you have somewhere between 20, from 7 to 13, you have 6. The middle of that is, 10. So I would make it 2031, somewhere there. At least there I'll put half my drink. But my full drink, I would put it on 2032, 2033. So in other words, if you really want to enjoy the fruit of this oil and gas sector, first of all, you may want to behave with the police so that when the time comes, you are not behind bars. Second of all, if you are in the road, you may want to drive safe because, well, you don't want to die before, you know, eating oil money. Unless you are already driving one of those Range Rovers with the oil license plate, then sure, go nuts. Bye now. So, somewhere between 2029 and 2035, that time period, somewhere between 2029 and 2035, is when we are, according to the math that you are going to do if you look at the 2024, Deloitte Namibia's, industrial baseline survey on this whole production phase. That means if production is most likely to begin somewhere between 2029 and 2035, we are not getting into full production mode up until somewhere 2040, mid 2040-ish. Yeah, I know. So eat healthy, exercise, live long. That's gonna be a tough one. That is gonna be a tough one. And then, for those of you that are looking forward to decommissioning, make it 2060s, 2070-ish. Yeah. Chances are very high I'm gonna be dead by then, so I don't care. Okay, now I'm just being mean. Now, that is in a nutshell, the news that was just thrown, at least in terms of timeline or chronology, that the oil and gas industry is, the oil and gas industry is, is associated with in terms of from the appraisal or the seismic surveys to production, is somewhere between 7 to 13 years. So that takes us to 2029 to 2035, somewhere in between there. That, and even that will, won't be in our, according to this timeline, even then that will not mean a full production. That will mean, the beginning of production. So if you are looking at 2035, 2029, 2035 as the beginning of production, then full production is somewhere 2040, 2045. I'll put my full drink on that one between 2045, 2050.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge as we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30 day package, you get uncapped data usage for the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
And welcome back. The time is 2 minutes past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you are listening to the Home Run with Helmut. And before you start asking, where's Dwight? He's listening to himself, but in Timbukushu. He's listening to himself. I love Bantu languages. He's listening to himself. Because he's not hearing himself well. Kadaku you the one. If you are a Bantu language speaker, then your chances are very high you have the same direct translation in your language. So that, not a lot of translation is needed to, for me to do them. But, before I continue rambling, I would like to bring you one audio that I managed to, acquire thanks to the man who is listening to himself. And that is an audio coming out of the Namibia International Energy Conference that took place last week. And the voice you are about to hear is that of that is of Madam Maggie Shino, who is the Petroleum Commissioner for the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy. still getting used to these, you know, ministries. This is a part of the speech that, you know, a part of her very long speech is about, you know, 24 to 25 minutes. You know, it's actually a long speech. I had to, you know, just cut a segment, you know, just to cut a piece of it, to complement my show because, well, it would have taken over my show, of which at this point, you know, if I played the whole thing, she would just have to call Eagle FM and, you know, or not call, but just send an invoice, you know, invoice Eagle FM for making her do my, you know, my show on my behalf. And since, you know, month end is Wednesday, I decided not to take the, you know, not to take chances. Not with my salary. So, let's take a quick listen to the audio and then we'll come back on the other side. Please do stay tuned. A home run with Helmut on Eagle FM.
Thank you very much, Gogo. And it's always a pleasure to address the investment community and the delegation at this platform, but let me stand on the protocol, observe, right, Honorable Prime Minister, my Deputy Prime Minister and Minister, it's a pleasure for us to have you in our midst at this stage. I'm going to take a few moments just to give a layout of the landscape of how we have been doing lately in the first 12 months mostly. Since the last update that we have given at the Namibian International Energy Conference, a lot has happened in Namibia. A lot has happened in Namibia. And it's because of that we are standing here today to give you a picture of what has happened and what is still yet to come in terms of how we are driving the industry. The first foundation that we are building on is based on the Namibian country's desire and the need and the agenda that the country has set for itself in terms of driving then this industry. What we are saying is that with the exploration, with the work that has happened since the discoveries that we have made, we have barely started to scratch the surface in terms of what is the potential for this country. Because of that the theme of my speech today is to give you an update and information that we are driving the development of this industry, but we are driving it from a point of exploration. And this we are doing because we have just realized the potential that we, Namibia as a country, have in terms of what is yet to come. So we are capitalizing on the recent discoveries as we have made them. And we are also making sure that these discoveries are shaping the future of the Namibian nation. We are also making sure that these discoveries are developed in a sustainable manner, and we are growing the capability of the Namibian nation as a whole on its own to stand on its 2 feet and be able to develop this sector on their own. With that, we haven't lost focus. We are accelerating very, very fast towards making sure that first oil is attained for Namibia. Right now, the beacon, we're looking at the year 2029, 2030, and that acceleration means that we are putting all forces behind ensuring that Namibia become an oil-producing nation by that year. With that being said, we are also focusing on ensuring that in our agenda to industrialize Namibia, we realize that the need for affordable, accessible, and stable energy is critical. And we also understand that there's a drive within the world for energy transition. We know the beauty of the environment that we have, and we hold it dear. And that is because we know that we are setting the pace for the energy transition, an energy transition that will be driven by the Namibian at our own pace. With that, we are moving forward into changing the Namibian landscape by making sure that Namibia become an oil-producing nation. We have started the work, and a lot is happening onshore that most people don't bring to the fore. With the work that has been done by Recon Africa, we just finished drilling the Naingopo well, and we are now starting to move forward into really testing this Damara fault belt by doing the exploration D12 well. That is what we are planning to do. However, as you can see from that image, the prospectivity of the region and of the block is massive. And this is what takes time for us to uncover, and we are doing so with the work that is being done by Recon Africa. Moving to the east of Recon Africa, still onshore, Monitor Exploration Ltd. is also moving at an aggressive pace with the work that they are doing. They have just finished acquiring 2D seismic data onshore, and with this information, we have managed to map a number of prospects, and one that has a very beautiful anticline structure that we just need to drill it. We are now working on taking the gravimetric data plus the magnetic and ensuring that the location for that well that will be drilled within PEL 104 will be a well that is successful, and the reserve potential that can be observed in this prospect are they listed. Again, within the onshore basin in Block 101, Elephant is also working hard, combining also both the gravimetric and the magnetic data to ensure that we have structures that are mapped and taking into consideration the information as is being produced by other explorers to then be able to map the location of where we are and what the prospectivity of this area is.
Welcome back. You know, listening to the petroleum commissioner and looking at the, you know, the Deloitte Namibia 2024 for industrial baseline survey makes one go, eish, this is gonna take a while. Because if you listen carefully, then you heard the petroleum commissioners using words like, drilling, you know, seismic survey. They've just acquired the data. That means we are in the first 2 to 5 year time period, the first stage, the 2 to 5 year time period for most, or, you know, for, let me not use the word most, for some wells. We're in the time period of, we're in appraisal period, that 2 to 5 year projection time, according to the Deloitte IBS, report. Industrial baseline survey. That basically means, this industry is not one, it's not instant porridge. Unfortunately, it's not instant porridge that you just, put together, add a few water above 1 degree Celsius and then you have food. Nope. This is a home cooked meal where you have to go out, buy the ingredients piece by piece, and you have to buy the right one depending on your preference. Except these ones, we're still in the first, at least as we speak. And also listening to the words, to the words of the petroleum commissioner, that is, words like, like survey, still gathering data, because according to that, according to this report, what it show, seismic survey, drilling, and data analysis, that's the, it's the first stage. The first stage of the, of setting up the oil and gas industry. On the bright side, we have good news coming out of it. At least if we take it, with a pinch of salt, we have good news coming out of it that, they are drilling, and those ones that are doing the drilling, they are coming out with positive data, that is, okay, you know what, we have spent, millions of dollars, and we have found this. We have found what we are looking for. Thank heavens. I don't know if any one of you have lost money. we're not even talking about, you know, those that have lost, you know, 700,000, you know, 700,000, 200,000, not firing in shots, 200,000 from schemers. That's too much to give those of us that are broke a heart attack. Now, just look at, take for example, losing $100, especially this time of the month, if your payday is month end, it's the most painful thing. Okay, no, it's not the most painful. There's a, you know, there's a heartbreak, and then there's, you know, the bees, scorpions, okay, they're a little, but it's painful. Now, imagine spending 300 million in an investment, and then it turns out with, well, we didn't find what we were looking for. That have got to be painful on a whole another level. Now, with that, let's come to the, now let's go to one of the things that if you get the full speech, which you can find on their YouTube channel. And there are actually a lot of speakers that spoke at that event. It was a 3-day event, right? And because the conference took place from 23 to 25 April this year, and that is it took place from last week Wednesday and ran all the way to Friday. So, of course, you have they had a lot of guests, and this year's Namibia International Energy Conference 2025 was themed "Leading the Way, Becoming the Energy Hub Within Country Value." Now, the biggest, the biggest part of generating something or coming up with a business is first, well, someone will have to buy it. What is your potential market? And this is why even if in Europe, especially on the energy discussion, you have a lot of European countries that are trying to come up with the best, with the best form of green energy that they can supply to other countries. Because if you have it, you will have the market of supplying it to everyone else. Now, as of right now, one of the very, very, very few countries that are energy independent, although the independent part is debatable, is France. Because they use nuclear energy. Don't ask how they acquire that nuclear, the uranium is going to raise a lot of, East African questions. But what you see there is, they are one of those countries that have been going, you know what? We understand the green part, the green transition, but we need energy. So we are going to, plus nuclear energy is one of those forms of energy that's still debatable. Debated by a lot of experts as to just how green it is. Is it green enough to continue with, or is it not green enough that we should stop it at the same time with oil? Now, both sides actually make sense to some degree, because, it's very green in a way that it does not generate, the carbon emission that is associated with oil and gas. Because oil and gas, when you are drilling it, you are using these, machineries that are, producing, all these gases that are harms the environment. And when you are using it, it's even worse. Now, with nuclear energy, mining it, you are using heavy earth moving machines, so, and there are fuel guzzling, so that's a lot of fuel. That's a lot of fuel that you're burning. Now, those earth moving machines were made with giant pieces of metal that also had to be mined. I mean, when you start tracing the carbon emission, chain, it takes you to some very dark corners of this whole green energy transition discussion. But what's even more interesting is 2015 Paris agreements, where they, you know, where a lot of countries, over 100 something countries, by 170 I think countries, signed the you know, the Paris agreements, energy transition agreements. That was in Paris. As I mentioned, Paris is in France. But, you know, countries like the UK, Germany and the Netherlands, especially Germany and the Netherlands, took the whole transition to a whole another level, to the point where, you know, they made it look like the Paris agreements were signed in, you know, Munich agreements. But that's on them. So, as part of, as part of her speech, okay, before we get to her speech, I have something I would like to point out. In the group of, in a group of, more like a list of guests that, that this conference had, it's a list of, a lot of professionals in the field. From the interim managing director at NAMCO to the petroleum commissioner herself. And some of the most notable names, is a Cameroonian, one of my favorite, energy guy. Dwight is not a huge fan, but I am. Executive chairman of Africa Energy Chambers, that's NJ Ayuk. I've read the homeboy's biography like several times, and his story is one that strikes me as society makes monsters. They are not born; society makes them. So, grew up mostly in Europe. Went to school and became went to school and graduated in law. That's in the U.S. And in 2015, he was working in the Darfur region of Sudan. And 2015, the Darfur region of Sudan is not a place that you wanted to find yourself, because, well, it was just it was a war-torn area. Now, according to his observation, whether he's using it to justify his, to justify his business model, or it's really what he observed, was that the war in that part of the country was, it's not something that one could just stop. There were billions of dollars at stake, and literally wrote a book with that title, Billions of Dollars at Stake. Now, I didn't follow the whole conference. So it wasn't until I went through their, website, then I looked on the list of speakers, and there he was. So like, oh, this should be an interesting one. Now, Mr. Ayuk basically, caught my attention, because he's one of the advocates of, what the petroleum commissioner pointed out later on, in her speech, and that is energy transition. You see, for every country that is investing in oil and gas, it's always faced with a criticism of, how are you part of the Paris agreements? Paris climate agreements, and you still have significant investment in oil and gas. So that raises up, one of those very, giant, energy transition questions in terms of climate mitigation strategies that, I think whether it's, back in 2021 or 2022, I remember Dudley drew a cartoon on it that was, captioned Robbing Peter to Pay Paul. Robbing Peter to Pay Paul was somewhat in a reference of, running around the world boasting, about our investments in two forms of energy generation that are conflicting. One being the clean one, aka green hydrogen, and you have another being the non-clean one that we want to get rid of. Now, when one looks at these two forms of energy generation, raises up the, one very interesting transition discussion of, you know, of where even, again, professionals are polarized on whether or not, on whether or not we should transition in an instant or we should transition over an extended period of time. Now, transitioning in an instant, that's going to have a lot of social and political chaos, not to mention economic chaos. So I don't think there's anyone, political or kindergarten, that's dumb enough to go with that. You can go with it, but if your goal is to bring about, you know, a craziness apocalypse, then sure, you will be going about it the right way. But then that leaves us with the long-term transition. The long-term transition now is not a one-size-fits-all. Because economically, every country is, you know, every country is different in terms of economic advancement. You have a lot of, you have a lot of developed countries that, you know, for them it will be, even though they will have, they will face, they will most likely face some significant economic fallout. It will not be as significant as one that will be faced by developing countries like Namibia, for example. So that means if we are to go with the energy transition of, over a period of time, that means, Namibia's energy transition will, Namibia will not just copy Germany's energy transition model. Because first of all, Germany has the technology, the economic capabilities, and the expertise to carry out a transition within a short period of time. And also the money. Now, developing countries like Namibia don't have that luxury. First of all, we barely have the expertise. Don't even talk about the money and, the infrastructure of, to carry out that transition. The green hydrogen is dominated by, is dominated by German investors. Why? Well, once again, hence, don't mention the money. So it's a somewhat, that leaves us with, if we are going to do a transition over a period of time, each country will have to carry out the transition, depending on the strength of its economy. So that means, Namibia's transition period is most likely going to be longer than because we are a developing country compared to take for example Germany's transition period, which is most likely going to be shorter because one, they are a developed country. Like I pointed out earlier, they have the expertise, they have the they have the infrastructure, they have the money. So that means they can fund a bunch of their projects that will help them in the transition, whereas a lot of us we'll have to go out there and borrow that money that we'll be using in the transition, which is where a lot of countries, find themselves right now. Let's borrow money to help us transition. Now, the borrowing part is one that have already hit, it's a Titanic that have already hit an iceberg at this point, and it's slowly sinking because, especially for Africa, and that's because this year we are going to witness the opening. This year we are going to witness the the official operationalization of the of an Africa Energy Bank. Africa Energy Bank, which is an interesting organization, which again goes back to the to the borrowing part hitting the iceberg. Well, what happened? Well, long story short, a lot of countries, developed countries, they have this model where it's very difficult for them to give you money to invest in any energy generation strategy if that energy generation strategy is a non-green one. That means if if oil and gas is the energy generation you want to venture in, it'll be very difficult to find the funding from developed countries. So a lot of Africans saw that as, you know what, how about we just come up with our own financial institution that will help fund anyone that wants to venture into oil and gas in terms of energy generation. And of course, that did not sit well with a lot of developed countries. For one, well, competition. Two, it's counter. How do I put this? It's counter the whole energy transition period. Now, Africa Export Import Bank and Africa Export Import Bank and the African Petroleum Producers Organization. Look at it as the African version of, of OPEC. Look at that. Now, although a lot of member states and individuals of OPEC played a significant role into the founding of this organization, it's a fascinating read. Now, the African Petroleum Producers Organization, APPO, formerly called African Petroleum Producers Association, APPA, was established in...
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% of its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it.
Easy money.
Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. AutoCash, it's that simple.
Ouli mnangeshefa no hara kushivifa oma akuro yo kupitira mohorike radio station yo Eagle FM enya mukuru olongaha ninge kwatafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konorahita timwe heali imwe ne heali imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116 mamberewa konorahita tunatu bali ohetatu batatu ne nola no natu ninge tumo emaila monica@eaglefm.com.na opomone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM, the eye. 29 minutes left to the hour of 29 minutes left to the hour of 6. So until then, we still have 29 minutes to wrap up this discussion. So we are on the transition discussion. Now, the question of transition is one that is not only a discussion here in Namibia. This is a discussion that is more like a baffling experts that are experts of the energy transition or energy generation, balancing generating energy to run our day-to-day activities, both, industrial, economical, same WhatsApp group, and saving the planet. It's a giant question mark. Now, where were we? The APPO, aka African Petroleum Producers Organization, or just look at it as a fancy African version of OPEC, and of also, by the way, South Africa, Nigeria, and Angola are part of, and especially Angola and Nigeria are known producers of oil. Ringing a lot of redundant bells. The APPO Afrexim Bank. I don't know why they didn't just call it Africa Export Import Bank, because they, by trying trying to shorten every word. Africa to Afr, export to X, import to IM, and then bank. Now it is Afrexim Bank. Who walks around saying, I work for Afrexim Bank? It's just, at this point, it's just much easier to say, I work for Africa Export Import Bank than I work for Afrexim Bank. But anyway, I mean, you guys would have come up with a better name. Unless your point was to make it difficult for your employees to tell people where they work, then that way, then, well, you went about it the right way. Back in 2022, the African Import and Export Bank, aka Afrexim Bank, maybe it makes sense in French, but in English and the book of you, nah. The African Import Export Bank signed an agreement with the African Petroleum Producers Organization, according to which both parties will collaborate. Now, this is back in 2022, on the establishment of an Africa energy transition in support of Africa-led energy transition strategy. So, this energy transition strategy is a giant debate in the energy transition realm, and what they are, you know, what developed countries came up with a strategy of helping, and this is where the word help there is an overstatement, and I'll get to why that is later. Now, developed countries came up with a way of helping developing countries in their energy transition, and the way they figured to help to help developing countries to transition was to borrow the money that will help them in the transition. Now, a lot of developing countries were like, okay, so first of all, I'm already drowning in in debt, but I'm already drowning in debt for me to develop, but you're asking me to drown in even more debt to transition. So it's that didn't sit well for a lot of African figures like Mr. Ayuk. It didn't sit very well. It's one of those people that have been singing for a very long time that energy transition on the African continent, we are going to transition, but how about we do it at our own pace? Now, that part of doing it at our own pace is one that, again, raises another question. You know, take energy transition as, examination, studying and passing at school, and developed countries as your parents. Now, your parents are telling you, you're going to have to study and pass because you live in our house. And then you go like, how about I just study and pass at my own pace? Chances are very, very high. They're going to kick you out of their house. Now, that's going to raise one question. Question is, can you survive on your own out there? So, this is something that a lot of African countries now a lot of African countries have to face. Now, according to the Africa Export Import Bank website, the new institution's role is to accelerate Africa's economic development whilst ensuring this progress is compatible with with and complementary to sustainable development goals, as well as the continent's long-term social and environmental objectives as set out in the African Union Agenda 2063. The Africa we want. So the energy transition is one heck of a debate. Now, that also is something that the Petroleum Commissioner points out in her speech that, even though we are talking about a significant investment, and we are here over a 3-day conference excited about new finds and the positivity coming out of the oil and gas sector in our country. Well, here's the thing. She knew that some of the questions that are going to come is, didn't you guys sign the Paris Agreement? Signed back in 2015. It was signed in 2015, 2016. Now, the goal is Paris Agreement, this is legally, is, you know, supposed to be legally binding under international law. There's a reason why I'm saying supposed to be, because, well, a lot of, now, if you followed, you know, COP29 back in last year in Azerbaijan, a lot of developed countries' leaders were, you know, kept singing the same song that, how about we stop talking and start working? Because a lot of developed countries have been singing a song without dancing to the, you know, to their, you know, without aligning their dancing tune to their song. So a lot of developing countries, especially the island nations, have been, you know, bashing their heads on the table saying, come on, let's get practical, people. Let's get practical. But, well, easier said than done, now becomes very, very evident in discussions like this. Now, it's the Paris agreements which are supposed to be binding, well, they are, they're just not being followed, by a lot of, you know, a lot of players, especially the big players. They are legally binding which are legally binding under international law on climate change adopted back in 2015 aims to limit, you know, global warming to, you know, to well below 2 degrees above pre-industrial levels, with the effort of limiting it to 1.5 degrees Celsius. Well, how do I put this? It's not going well. Six. I saw my light blinking, but it was, a little too late. So, but you can still call in. Just put in mind, I'm, you know, what I'm talking about here is the energy transition, and not really, not energy transition per se, but our dearly beloved oil and gas industry, the progress that we, the progress that it's making, as you just heard from the excited, from the excitement in the voice of in the voice of the Petroleum Commissioner. But also, it's very important to understand that, if we are to follow the, if we are to follow the, what I at least like to call, expert analysis from Deloitte Namibia's 2024 baseline, industrial baseline survey, that, we still have a long way to go before we get to production phase. And that we are talking rudimentary stage production phase, let alone full production phase. We're talking somewhere 2035, 2040-ish. So eat healthy, exercise, live longer, enjoy oil money. 0832888401. That's a line. Quick break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Let me get you one last, interesting statement from the Africa Export Import Bank. And pointing out the reason why they partnered up with the, APPO, aka African Petroleum Producers Organization, to come up with this, to come up with the Africa Energy Bank. And according to the Africa Export Import Bank, the African Energy Transition Bank, African Energy Transition Bank, is going to address an urgent and existential need on the continent. Africa stands to experience profound effects from climate change, while a considerable poverty across the continent, you know, disincentivizes a focus on environmental care and sustainability for many populations. But that's when the sweet spot of the sentence, you know, of the paragraph now hits, that moreover, Africa's oil and gas industry faces a growing pressure as international investment is in hydrocarbon diminishes. That's a fancy way of saying oil and gas. The hydrocarbon part, not the diminishing part. If you thought diminishing was a hydrocarbon, tertiary is free next year. Please go. I'm begging you. For the love of God, please go. You know, please. Thank you. Now, while Africa's transition towards alternative energy sources presents great opportunities for the continent, this transition must be carefully managed to minimize the short-term adverse impact of the transition while maximizing its longer-term benefits. The goal here is that we don't want to instantly transition and then, 2 years down the line realize that we are looking at one economic blow below the belt after another. Then we realize, for us not to risk an economic fallout or more like a social chaos, how about we just go back to the oil and then we'll figure out, the best way to transition. So according to the African Export Import Bank, that's their goal. To transition in a way that the transition is done long though it may be, but once and for all. Not, transition and turn around and say, yeah, my God, we've created a lot of unemployment. And we're looking at a bunch of guys with Molotov cocktails that are very hungry and angry that wants to, storm our beloved Ludwigsdorf. Sorry guys, relax. No one is Molotoving, cocktailing you. So the transition then in this case makes sense. Now, this method of transition is one also that was, and no surprises there, reached in terms of the, in one of their nuclear discussion by the World Economic Forum, that, we would do ourselves a lot of good if we incorporate, nuclear energy in our transition. Mr. or Dr. Malakowski, who is an expert at nuclear energy, writing for the World Economic Forum, was that 2023 or 2022, pointed out, don't quote me on that one, pointed out that, basically depending on, crystal balls here. And the crystal balls are used in some kind of, is it necromancy of, fortune telling? Maybe just another version of tarot cards or something. So it's, the point he was trying to make is, we are not miraculing our way out of this transition. We'll have to go through it. So unless you can come up with abracadabra way of helping the transition, it's going to be very slow. Which then again raises the question of, if we're going to transition very slow, how long is it going to take? And what damage is going to come from the environment that we will have to inevitably deal with? A short answer, a lot of droughts, a lot of flooding, a lot of wells, you name it. So it's time to buy jackets. Speaking of which, well, it's winter, you may as well just buy jackets. I'm not saying this winter is going to be snow in Namibia. If it is, not because I prophesied it. God knows I can't pull that off. I can prophesy I'm not even that good at prophesying what I'm going to have for dinner. Well, that's because from here I'll be telling myself, I'm going to go home and cook. Then halfway through my, between Kleinwindhoek and Kommersdal, I'm hungry and tired. I'm like, okay, please, can we stop by here, pick pizza straight home, eat, go to bed. Okay. My wife is going to be so proud of my laziness. But anyway, So, one thing in the next 12 minutes, now I just have to... I have a tendency of overwriting things. One thing to pick up from this is for those of you that were on time, that tuned in on time, and listened to the voice on the audio that is of the Petroleum Commissioner Maggie Shino, was that the language that she uses, especially just for the first 5 minutes of her speech, is one that tells us that okay, we have an oil, we have an existing oil and gas industry, but to reach production, which is the monetization part in terms of contribution to GDP that we are all looking forward to, is going to most likely commence somewhere from 2029 moving forward. From 2029. And, somewhere between 2029 and 2030 and there, but full production, we are looking at 2040. So, can't stress this enough. Live longer, eat healthy. Don't get into trouble with authority. Okay, that's a tough one. Now, in her speech, she pointed out, she used words like drilling, seismic survey, that goes to show us, according to the Deloitte Namibia reports, that we are still in the primary stage of that chronological, oil and gas chronological, outline. Pardon me. That's my container. No one is shooting at me. Chronological timeline. And that means we now just have to fasten our seatbelt and hold on for dear life. So went on to talk about energy transition, and we are not the only country that is, and by the way, just something just that's worth noting. We are not the only country that's having the oil and gas investment, and also at the same time dealing with the energy transition in terms, to help the global agreements as it was signed back in 2015, what is known as the Paris Agreement to combat climate change. Well, we're not the only one. You have countries like, you have developed countries with a thriving oil and gas industry, like the Qatari, you have the Saudis, you have a lot of Middle Eastern countries, you have, throwing the US in there, throwing Russia, and you have a lot of countries that are dealing with that, that are dealing with that dilemma. So we're not the only one, in the words of Dudley, that are robbing Paul to, robbing Peter to pay Paul. No, dear. Oh, just before, just in case you're feeling bad that, oh my God, we are not saving the environment. Well, it turns out it's not just us. Let's quickly get it out of the ground, according to one article I read at some point. So, we're not the only one dealing with that. So, it's a global, conundrum that everyone is dealing with. But that again raises the question of, can we pull off the international and economic pressure that comes with this slow transition? Now, why am I asking that question? Well, it's because the Energy Africa Transition, the Africa Energy Transition Bank was founded primarily because developed countries' financial institutions were being so stubborn at listening to the to African countries and the transition model we were proposing to them. For them, we just had to do it by borrowing money from them. Now, if you remember, COP26 in Glasgow, one point something or 2 point something billion dollars was promised to South Africa. Now, the U.S. representative, you know, the U.S. climate change representative to the U.N., well, who is this? John Kerry. I remember, just before COP27 in Egypt pointed out that, the money that will help South Africa transition, you know, in its energy transition is ready. All they have to do is just, say yes and they will have the money. Now, I would assume that at some point they said yes because that money was made available, at least a portion of it, during COP27 in Egypt. Now you are looking at a country that is grappling with, with its own development and a lot of social issues because it's a developing country. And also drowning in debts, the debt to GDP ratio keeps going wider and wider because of its developmental debt. Now, then you now throw in the debt of, the debt of, that comes from, that comes from transition. So, you understand why some organizations just figured out, this plan is not going to cut it. We'll have to come up with our own plan now, which is why I'm asking the question of, statements like allow us to, to carry out the energy transition at our own pace because of our economic, economic infancy is a very good statement to make, because instant energy transition is going to descend, will descend any country into economic and social chaos. Throw politics in that basket. So that then raised the question of, can you handle the pressure as a country? Can we handle the pressure as a country? Now, I'm asking this question, and now if you were listening from the beginning, then you must have heard me say that if you look at the time period, as it is, the approximate time period that's laid out by Deloitte Namibia in terms of, Deloitte Namibia in terms of industrial baseline survey of generally just the whole, how the whole oil and gas thing works. If you look at that time frame, you will start telling yourself one question that, first of all, we cannot afford any political instability. If we are looking forward to achieving full production somewhere between 2035 and 2040, we really, really, really don't want any political instability. Because if the investors that have already poured in millions of dollars in this appraisal and all these seismic surveys takes off and lose all their all their money, let alone the return on investment, and there's economic chaos, and then they run, it's going to be very difficult to convince them to come back and invest some of their money again. Because even if it was me, I would tell you, well, I ran out of your country after losing billions of dollars. There is no way I'm going to take the remaining one in the same country. Like, how can you assure me that there is not going to be any political chaos? Now, that one is an interesting epiphany that I just had before I walked in here. Before I walked in here at the beginning of my show, and that is, which is why I said again that, this is something that is, especially in relations to the oil and gas industry in Namibia, it's important to put that in mind for both political leaders and individual citizens and ordinary citizens. So, politicians, hype, any citizen, all Namibian citizens will have to ask ourselves one question. Whatever it is that I want to start political instability for, is it worth it? I know. It's a very good question to ask yourself. I'm not going to give you the answer. I don't have the answer. If I'll give you the answer, I'll give you the opinion of what I think is the answer. Ask yourself, is it worth it? If it's worth, go ahead. If it's not, I wouldn't actually recommend that, because I'm really following this time frame, at least by 2030, 2035, production, and I can buy myself a Vrupa with a license plate oil one. You know, the way this oil license plate is, you know, is everywhere. I think, this is just at the top of my head. I think if the whole Velvicia Sovereign Wealth Fund, which also, according to the President's State of the Nation address, is have seen some significant increments. If it gets to the point where every Namibia is getting a fee from that money per month, where, you know, whether you are working or not, you see a lot of actually the oil license plate will have to be made illegal. Because everyone will just be oil one. Now the police will be like, okay, oil one of 3 billion. Please add that, you know, oil two of 3 billion. Because, well, we are 3 billion. Oil four of 3 billion. Oil 100 million of, of 3 million, not 3 billion. That would be one heck of a population. Are we even gonna fit in here? 3 billion? Jesus. Oil one of 3 million. Oil two of 3 million. Oil four of 3 million. You do that. So, in a few seconds, we are going to take a quick break and we sign off on the other side. And then I'm gonna wish you a good day until tomorrow. So, energy transition, the oil and gas industry, the prospects, current status, the prospects of the future, like the Pakistani national anthem points, you know, says, glory of interpret of our past, glory of our presence, inspiration of our future. I haven't said that.
Are you ready for a fresh new flavor? Then enjoy the latest addition to the Vintook beer family. Vintook lemon flavored non-alcoholic beer. It's got the same taste that you love, but now with added lemon flavor to guarantee 100% refreshment in every sip. Now that's 100% real. Head to your nearest store and enjoy the new Vintook lemon-flavored non-alcoholic beer for yourself today. Vintook, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Oulio mnangeshefa, nawahara kushivifa oma kuroe kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mkuro olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosho ipindi konorahe tatu imwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mwamberewa konorahe tatu natu, mbali ohe tatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo mwane oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namur.
Now, that brings us to the end of the show. 1,000 apologies for that extended radio silence. That brings us to the end of the show, and we meet again, same time, same place here on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. If I were you, I would get myself the Deloitte, Namibia Industrial Baseline Survey of last year that shows the projection in terms of timeline, timeline of the oil and gas industry. So just, do yourself a favor, get yourself that report and go to page 8, look at the timeline and take advantage of the free tertiary education that's coming next year and equip yourself with the right skills that will enable you to get the best out of the oil and gas sector. Whether it's, if you have the right skills, you can do it now. That is still in production, in appraisal phase. Or when we get to the construction of the right infrastructure that's needed to transition over to production, then whatever phase, we are looking at a period of about 45 to 50 years, this thing is going to be running. So, although there are debates left, right, and center about the energy transition. That's not something that's unique to Namibia. It's something that is, that's a debate that's being had everywhere. With that, until tomorrow, same time, same place, here on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. For me, you all have a blessed evening.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
Just one more thing. This time frame, when you look at it, if I were you, I would invest, taking advantage of the free education and equip myself with a skill that will enable me to make money from this industry, especially if you are in Okahanja. Please, you do that. Invest in technical skills that does not involve taking people's lives. You know, it works. You don't have to look over your shoulders over the authorities. You know, a very good life to live. Jesus.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something the media will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Oulio mnangeshefa na wahara kushivifa oma akuro weo kupitira mohorike radio station aweo Eagle FM. Enya mkuro olongaha. Ningi kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosho ipindi konorahe tatu imwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 081-7147-116. Mwamberewa konorahe tatu natu, mbali o hetatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na opomone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsine Hangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-063. You can also email us at digital@omalighty.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build. Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.